when you're dealing with the kind of problems that Barbados is facing, and you're a political leader, you cannot take, let's say, a telescope, which is extended in order for you to look at distance, and put it at its shortest point, and then think that you're going to see clearly. Okay, the things go in phases, and if you had listened to the campaign of the Barbados Labour Party, they spoke about a number of things that they intended to do. And one of the things that they intended to do was to deal with the issue of governance. I think each political party, including the Democratic Labour Party, has to look at the issue of governance in Barbados for the future. Because the system, even though you've inherited a very sophisticated system, the Westminster model, it has now to be reformed, adjusted, and so on, in order to really deal with the problems of the society. Because what we are finding is that the actual form of government is not dealing with the society. So if you start to critique the government because it was faced with a crisis situation in terms of survival, and say that it is doing this, and you go for particulars as the discussion was going on, and accuse them of that and that, and then go to a conclusion to say that, one, that the people might have voted differently if they knew the government was going to do this, as if the government will not have to do that and other things as well in the time it has 5 years. I mean, it can also be brought down much sooner than that, but you have to have proper basis and cause for doing that. It would seem to be extremely strange that after the most historic defeat in Barbados, in which an established mass democratic party gained not a single seat in parliament, that the people of Barbados were on the basis of you quarreling over particulars in relation to crisis in the economy, would say, we don't like this government. Of course, there are always particulars where you don't like a government, but if it was that easy, if you could reduce politics to something so simple, then we would have changed the government every 3 weeks, because people will always be getting vexed about something. So you have to have the thing that they're getting vexed, and you have to have things that you're promising that they think that may work. And the analogy that has been used very often in relation to the problems that Barbados is facing is the question of you being in a tunnel and seeing no light at the end of the tunnel, or else seeing a light that coming at you as a train. So you have to deal with it in that way. So the another thing too is that a skilled political leader, I remember Mr. Sandford telling me right there in Broad Street near Trafalgar Square, when it was called that, years ago. I think it was probably coming up to the 91 election. It might have been, you know, the 81 election or something like that. It was one where it would be the 81, because they would have been in office in 91. They were out of office in 81. And he was saying that this government is going to do things at the last minute to make everybody feel sweet. So this is a new tactic in that sense, that any government will do the things that are going to be hard when it has a lot of political capital. This government now has tremendous political capital. The political capital is not going to evaporate because people vex about some particular policy. And remember that it is a certain set of people that will be angry and annoyed. Some of those are the people that are disappointed that actually support the government, but many of them are Democratic Labour Party people who have reasons to be angry and need reasons to criticize the government. That is not going to be the basis on which the government's policies should be changed, or the government is going to collapse. That is just the reality of the intricacies of governance and the difficulties of political decision-making and political leadership. And that is what we are faced with right now.
All right, thank you, Dr. Bell. We have like 7 calls here on hold, so we really got to go to the phone lines. Good morning, you're on Brass Tacks Sunday.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Please go ahead with your question.
Yeah, I'm on, I gather.
Yes, you're on the air.
Yeah, well, first thing, Mr. Sankar, I see you may be making the mistake of assuming that, you know, we still have 2 political parties in Barbados. The Democratic Labour Party was soundly defeated. I don't know if they've taken responsibility for what happened and caused us to be in this situation, having to send home people and so on.
Do you want to direct that question to Mr. DePisa?
Yes, because from Mr. Pisa's side, I'm hearing how we can get back the government. I am not hearing any solution. And I'm not throwing this at her because I don't like her or anything. I would like to see another party that can challenge the party in power now. And again, with the opposition there, I haven't heard them saying, well, we want to form the next government and we are going to start a party that is going to be a serious challenge to the present government. These are the type of things I would like to hear, but I am not hearing this. Another thing, too, this thing we call the social partnership is about time. It is about time the social partnership starts to co-opt other groups as necessary. Because the church has a voice, we have charities, we have the co-op, this is a very big movement. These are people at times should be included and not come to the usual solution. Well, there's only government, the private sector, established body, and the unions. So those are things that bother me. But however, the question you asked me to direct to Ms. DePisa, is that her name? I would direct that now.
All right. Thank you very much for your question, Mr. Pisa.
Yes.
And then I'll come to Senator Franklin.
Right. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks into my presidency, I was on this very program, and I made all of the statements necessary to make the apology to the country, because clearly a 30-0 defeat is a referendum against the party. There's no doubt about that. And we failed the people of Barbados. Again, there's no doubt about that. And in that session, I hope the caller was listening, there was that apology to the people of Barbados for letting them down. Having said that, we are not in a mode to wallow in self-pity, which is why, as I speak, we have an in-camera retreat where we are, first of all, we're not speaking to ourselves. We've had someone come in to give that hard analysis that we may not want to do for ourselves, and to guide our breakout sessions to ensure that we do not fail the people of Barbados again. That having been said, I think the people of Barbados, having voted for something, deserve to get it. There were mission critical positions that were put. There were issues that were voiced, most in particular that the hated and despised NSRL would be removed. However, they did not tell the people of Barbados that it would be replaced with something that actually rakes in more taxes than the NSRL ever did. That is not my opinion. I got that out of the IMF 89-page report that came out, I believe it was the 5th of October. I see the minister has a paper copy before him. I have my electronic copy before me. So that is not my opinion. That is just simply stating what some other party had to say about us, that removing the NSRL and replacing it with these other taxes actually brings in more money than the NSRL ever did. No. We had the same situation in relation to the municipal solid waste tax that was, again, universally despised and then retracted. And the tax on water, because I don't care what you call it, it is a tax, $1.50 a day, actually amounts to more than the average Barbadian was paying in municipal solid waste tax. I know, because I got a bill, and my bill was about $300. It wasn't quite $300. And I don't have what the average Barbadian would have as a whole spot. Mine is a little larger than that. And mine was $300 and something. Everybody is paying $1.50. And that comes closer to $600 a year. So that's almost double what they were paying with the municipal solid waste tax. These things were not shared with the people of Barbados before. Also, the bloated cabinet. We speak about the bloated cabinet, but we have to speak in terms of the train that follows on behind the cabinet. Each minister has a personal assistant, a permanent secretary. They need office space. They need office staff. They need office furniture. They have to pay utilities. The bill for consultants. How do you add up all of that and then send home people at the bottom who are earning around and about $2,000, if they're lucky, a month? How does that net off into savings to the country?
Let's hear from the minister, and maybe he can tell. Senator, I'll come to
but
you
if
right
I
now.
If I may finish, though, because I don't have much time here, so part of me wanting to say all that I have to say in as short a time as possible. We keep speaking, and I keep hearing in terms of fixing our economy. But we cannot let go of the kite string that is our society. in everything that we do, we have to keep the people at the forefront. And if you are on the day telling people that they're going home, they have mortgages, they pay rent, they have children to send to school, they have bills to pay, they owe somebody something, a higher purchase, and you have not given them the opportunity to set their house in order, that is an unfortunate situation that says that you are not actually caring as you have sold yourself to
people. Forgive me here, and I really have to come in here, because when I listen to you, I think about the economic situation that brought us here. And that economic situation was a train going downhill real fast. I was writing about that from 2010, okay? And when I understand what you are saying about people going home and bloated cabin, and I can't fault that argument. I have concerns about the cabinet size, etc. But what I have difficulty understanding, the logic that you're coming with here now, is the fact that we had a situation that was untenable in Barbados in the economy. And that is my concern. It is as, and that is why I went back to that 2014 speech, because I remember I listened to it when Ms. Stewart said it. And I said then, the Arthur administration didn't deal with that situation. The David Thompson administration, then the Foreign Industrial Administration, did not deal with that situation. And now we've come to this, all right? So I find it very difficult to really sit here and listen to you going on that vein, when in truth and in fact, it had to happen. What's going on now had to happen. Right.
Yeah, but did it have to happen this way? If you would recall,
you tell us what the Democrat Labour Party would have done differently, because you know that is what people really want to know.
Not would have done differently, because you can't expect us to acknowledge, as the caller said, to acknowledge that what we did not please the people of Barbados, and then expect me to sit here and defend it. I will not do that. You can't have your cake and eat it too. It cannot be both ways. Good. So moving on from that point, I will say though that, and I said it before, when you are thinking of rationalizing the civil service, you have to be doing it with an eye to the future. The world, the entire world is turning to technology. How is it that you are sending over... And that is why I am satisfied that the unions are now neutered. They are no longer representing workers. You have to have a position where you understand that it is young people who are in tune with technology in a way that the person who has had 20-something years in the public service and is looking forward only to retirement will not have that same commitment.
Let the minister answer this.
I really don't know where to start, but I'll start here. For the last 3 years, prior to us taking over the government, national insurance contributions were not paid for public servants. In addition, and that was about $300 million, in addition, there were about $1.9 billion in arrears that were owed to the people of Barbados in tax refunds and to suppliers of goods and services. And so therefore, to the extent that we have committed that one, we will not employ anybody and not pay the national insurance, this government has been keeping current with its national insurance obligations, as well as keeping current with any set of goods and services that's being procured by the government. Now, I hope that as part of your discussion, that $1.9 billion that was voted for and not actually paid, I hope that that becomes a part of the discussion for what the Democratic Labour Party, such that to the point that, as I said, you can't spend money twice. So if you're going to stay current with respect to persons' national insurance contributions, that takes money. And so therefore, the $300 million that we are going to repay on behalf of public servants over the next 4 years, I would appreciate a response from the Democratic Labour Party as to what they can do to make sure that some of those monies that were voted for are otherwise used, that they too can become a part of the discussion. Because if we are talking about caring, the reality of the situation is that $1.9 billion was just owed for things that simply were not done.
I would hope that extent, this is the point at which Mr. Price asked for specifics like he did for my colleague on the end. Like because we're having figures thrown out here. And
I'll give you the specifics. No, you $300 million for national insurance contributions for public servants that was not paid. About $200 million for rents to the national insurance for accommodating government. About $400 million in tax refunds to ordinary Barbadians that this government is going to repay. You understand? And then the remainder in goods supply of goods and services to individuals and businesses in Barbados. $1.9 billion. Is that specific enough? That was voted for and not paid.
You see, this is where the specifics come from. It is where I want to know.
Right. So hold on.
When it was voted for and how it was otherwise applied.
Hold on. I'm saying to you that upon taking government, that these were the level of arrears.
Well, yeah, but you said voted for. So I want to know in other words, that part.
Good. So in other words.
Because I think everybody is aware.
Let me finish. I'm sure you're aware of the schedule of personal enrollments. You're aware of the estimates of revenue expenditure. The government votes its budget.
Yeah, but that doesn't send the money out the same time.
Hold on a minute.
You're giving the impression that the money went out and it was misapplied or applied in some other way.
When the government votes its budget, ma'am, and you are paying public servants every month, you're supposed to pay the national insurance.
Absolutely.
And that was not done.
That's a given
for the past 3 years. So the question to the Democratic Labour Party.
I think there were arrears regardless. That's not just 3 years.
Anyhow, all I'm saying is this. We are committed to resolving that. And the commitment to resolving that, because as a responsible employer, you make sure that you pay your national insurance for your employees. But as I said, you can't do that and do the other things at the same time. But beyond that, I just want to make it clear. In the Ministry of the Civil Service, if you look in the same schedule of personal enrollment, since you spoke to the size of the cabinet, you would recognize that in the estimates for this financial year, which was obviously laid in February, in the Ministry of the Civil Service, it had about, I think, 6 or 7 permanent secretaries in the Ministry of the Civil Service. You know what they were doing? Do you know what they were doing? These persons were, if you check the schedule of personal enrollments for the past 5-6 years, there were either 6 or 7 permanent secretaries in the Ministry of the Civil Service. We have now taken those persons and redeployed them to work on behalf of the government of Barbados. And so therefore, to suggest that somehow there is an increase in cost with respect to permanent secretaries is disingenuous.
That's not correct. There were persons who were appointed as permanent secretaries in the last five months. Hold on a minute.
So, the size of the cabinet, we have rearranged some persons' duties. The cost to which you're referring to with respect to the government, yes, the cabinet is larger. But the reason the cabinet has to be larger is because every single element of government in Barbados is in a mess. And I can say to the country of Barbados right now that sitting in the Ministry of Finance, it would have been impossible for me personally in the last 5 months to do the job in finance and to also do the job in economic affairs and investment at the same time. Why? Because it requires absolute focus every single day to get up and correct what has been a serious problem that we found upon taking government. And so therefore, yes, the cabinet is larger. But the reason the cabinet is larger is because we need to get several things done at the same time. I do not know how the previous persons that was in my position effectively could have done what was required. And clearly, I understand why. Because the absolute focus on what needs to be done requires that you have people in place who have the time to be able to address it. So, yes, the cabinet is larger. Yes, it costs a little more. But the reality is we are trying to get hold of this hole, which was left. The government intends to lead the people out of this hole. And it means that we have to get as many people on board and mobilized to get out of this hole.
All right, let's take a next call. You're on Brass that Sunday. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Mr. Price.
Sorry, good afternoon. It's afternoon already.
Good afternoon to you, Mr. Price.
Yes, good afternoon.
How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you.
Okay, I want to, let me say good afternoon also to the members of the panel.
Good afternoon.
But, you know, I find it extremely strange this afternoon listening to the president of the Democratic Party and listening also to Councilor Franklin. I've got a few questions, though, for the president of the Democratic Party. Because I think one of the places where we should start our journey in relation to our conversation with the people of this country, right? Has Tom also to speak to Verlinda Pisa about, help me to understand the 3,000 appointments on the eve of a general election in this country, in circumstances where almost 3,000 were retrenched, went home for 2 years. We set up the last administration set up to oversee the Hal Gullit was the chair. They call it a tribunal. And 2 years after the people were suffering in this country at home, you understand me? They could not get a cent. All the debt was pork chops up at Sherburn Conference Center. I want to find out this morning from Mr. Verla De Pisa. Said she has this caring voice now, all of a sudden, about a retrenchment program. How did the Democratic Labour Party went about the exercise of the same retrenchment program in circumstances where they did not adhere to the first and last rule? And that was one of the commentaries coming from the same Hal Gullit who happened to
Excellent.
Be the chair.
This is precisely what I spoke of earlier, if I may intervene, because I really am on short time right now. This is precisely the point I was making earlier. You can't expect us to face in a different direction and then account perfectly and take on board all that happened before. My initial comment said, we have to learn from our mistakes. If it is that the NCC litigation said that LIFO is not the only consideration, and I know that is what it said, then why would you expect the next administration that is undertaking a retrenchment exercise to ignore those rulings? Why would you expect that I would sit here? Thank you. I don't know. I would not expect that you, knowing that that happened, would have me sit here and defend what happened. The tribunal said it was wrong. I will say it was wrong. And if it was wrong for the NCC to do it, it is wrong for central government to do it. It is wrong for the unions to endorse it. That is my stated position, and I will not resile from that.
Great. The problem, I want to ask you a question, though.
Just one more question, sir.
I want to ask a question quick, right? Since that you are aware of this, don't you believe that your voice should be silent relative to these comments? And I want to say this to Gavin.
No. This is a democratic process, and silencing me is simply not going to happen.
He wants to say something like Gavin, but Frank, I'm interested in hearing.
Yeah, right. I want to say this to Gavin.
Let me ask a question. Yeah.
I heard Mr. Franklin said this morning about people who were told not to come back on the job. Now, the Prime Minister, when she addressed the nation last Sunday at 5 o'clock, made it abundantly clear to the people of this country that people will not go home unless they are given checks. So anything that happens that and any procedure that took place that was not followed by the instructions of the Prime Minister cannot be blamed for it. So I want to tell Mr. Franklin this afternoon that inasmuch as you walk in the room telling people about people crying and people saying, I want to know where your voice was. Where your voice was, Mr. Franklin, when we had the same exercise in 2013, immediately after general election, I want to find out, bring some commentary to the fore and help to remind me as to the things you would have said, given the draconian way in which the Democratic Party operated in this country as an administration in this country. Because you're fooling the body in this country.
Don't sound too angry. Let me tell you. First of all, I do not make my living as a hired gun for the Baptist Labour Party, as you do. And I I'm not going to engage you in this kind of nonsense, right? Go out there and find a job, you know, and stop this nonsense on the radio every day attacking people for you got paid for it. I know you got paid for it, you know, so stop it now, you know. Let them give you a real job and stop this attacking. You're attacking me, does not bother me, okay? I have been consistent with my views when the Barbados Labour Party was in power, when the Democratic Labour Party is in power. I do not, and I've been vocal from the time I know myself. My primary school teacher told me that I was vocal, and I complained, I criticized him when he did something wrong when I was 10.
All right, just let me remind you that this program is being brought to you with the kind compliments of Williams Industries Incorporated. Welcome back to Brandstack Sunday. We'll take a couple more calls as we're close to the 12:30 news. You're on the air. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. Go right ahead with your question, please.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Go right ahead with your question, please.
Yes, I have a question. I get terminated in 2014, right? And they say that they didn't give me any thing like how the prime minister come on and say, well, first and for last. The DLP coming and swipe out me. I was there 19 years at an institution, and they swipe me out, and I didn't hear nothing. Mr. Franklin was quiet, though. Mr. Franklin, we went to Mr. Franklin, he do nothing. I know Mr. Franklin will come out like a big bad wolf, though. And that's all I have to say.
All right, thank you. We go to the next question. Another call. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
A very pleasant good afternoon to you, sir.
Yes, good afternoon. Go right ahead with your question, sir.
Thank you. Yeah, I just want to make a simple point, very simple point, because I'm concerned that person, especially Mr. Franklin, is so vocal in terms of trying to get individuals to rebel against going home. And I think, and this is only my simple opinion, that those persons who unfortunately may have to be displaced or will be displaced, Mr. Franklin should be helping those to see that there's an opportunity for them now to help themselves. Only recently I assisted two individuals who believe that they will go home in helping them to do a business plan. And I'm seeing that the opportunities that are available to them are enormous, good opportunities. And he should use his stance to help those individuals to see how they could better themselves in this exercise.
Is there anything else you want to discuss?
I want to hear Mr. Franklin's point. What he can do, what would he like to see happen? How can he assist them?
How can I assist them, sir? Listen to me, and listen to me very carefully. My job is to assist people. I help people every day. But I cannot assist them financially. And this is what people will need, finances. The government is saying to you, they're going to give these people a month's pay in lieu of notice, and they will give them something similar to severance. And for those people who got 10 years or more, they're going to wait until 60 to get the money. So when a fellow got to wait until 60 to get his money, what business plan are you going to help him with, or what business plan are you going to help him with without money? He's going to have to feed his children the same way. You know, most people in Barbados, most wage earners, over the God knows how long, we're working paycheck to paycheck. As soon as you stop these people from receiving the paycheck, they are on the breadline and poverty and on the street. They can't pay the bills. They can't do anything. They don't have savings. The savings have been wiped up now with the increases in everything that we just had recently. Road taxes, or what they call it, gas tax, and even they put on kerosene oil. You know, you have the same tax that the people talk about, the water tax. We have people who pay $32 and now they're for water bill. I know they're paying a $45 more as a tax. You pay more tax than you get for service. But come on, stop this nonsense. Now, I am not DLP, BLP. I used to be BLP, trust me. You know, and I fought hard for them. But I was never DLP. But I cannot sit down and watch the DLP devastate the people that elect them. And then you and others come out and try to justify it. There's no justification for this situation. Look, we have a situation in Barbados right now where we need a short of money. And we have one retailer of goods and services in this country who owes the government $35 million in VAT. I had said 25 recently, and people from the VAT department called me and tell me, no, Casper, it's 35. And there's nobody going trying to collect that. You know, instead, you are taking away money from people who can't afford it.
Well, thank you. Can I come in here, minister? Get the minister involved here.
It's important that, as I indicated earlier, and I think I need to reinforce it, we have set aside as part of our policy within the context of the social partnership that 20% of government's procurement will be set aside specifically to make available for those persons who are displaced. At the same time, we are bringing the trust loan program on stream. So I think...
Fund access.
Hold on. We're bringing the trust loan program on stream so that should Mr. Franklin or anybody else who cares to lend a hand, you should actually, in fact, be helping these persons with the business plans simply because the lack of financing that you are talking about or opportunities will be made available under that 20% of our government procurement program. Because we understand that, yes, you're going to get some severance. That's not going to last forever. But during the period of this adjustment, 20% of government's program, of government's procurement, sorry, will be made available to these persons. And that was agreed in the room with the private sector and the unions. And so therefore, whilst it seems as if you guys seem to want to attack the unions for wanting to have the last in first out as the mechanism, the broad context in which it was discussed was 20% of the procurement over the course of the adjustment period will be made available to those persons. And so it is not an exercise that is being done in a vacuum. And I want to assure those persons who may be displaced in the coming weeks that this will happen and the government will make those opportunities available. So I would encourage Mr. Franklin and anybody else in Barbados to help these persons formulate the very business plans to which you refer. Because one, financing will be made available, but there's also a sure market for whatever they choose to provide as far as goods and services to the government of Barbados.
All right, the question that I would ask though is what, and this is following off from what Senator Franklin said, what is being done to get the VAT that's owed by companies? What measures are being put in place by the BRA? Can you speak to that?
Well, I am not aware as to the particular instance to which he's referring. I know that they are let me rephrase. With respect to the Revenue Authority, and this is one of the things that we feel very strongly about. One, there can't be any arrears built up over the course of this adjustment period. So the Revenue Authority has already started to put in place a mechanism where the government owes people with respect to the VAT or income tax or whatever the case is, that we're going to start to pay those out starting this month. Now, if somebody is owing the government and we owe them in some other area, as I was here a couple of months ago, there's a new tax system that allows us now to look at everybody as a single taxpayer. And so therefore, if there's an instance like that, which I can't imagine that there would be to that extent, then that's an anomaly that would have to be dealt with. So I would have to commit to investigating and see what it is that these persons are talking about, because I can't imagine somebody owing the government $35 million and be not making an effort to collect. But the reality is, the program for settling tax arrears will start in earnest. Now, as cash flow of government allows, and we've financed that and modeled that over the course of the adjustment period, we will make some decisions with respect to whether it's VAT refunds, whether it is in cash or in offsets or other assets, with respect to that, corporation tax, personal income tax, and reverse tax credits. But the reality of the situation is that these are things that were left on the table for us to deal with. And part of the adjustment and part of what needs to happen with respect to the finances of businesses is that businesses require cash flow and certainty. And the program that we have designed allows for one, government to understand what it's spending, but it also allows businesses and people to be able to plan, because they will know that the government will be current with respect to its payables, and therefore they can go ahead and plan their affairs. And that is the single most important thing that anybody that is going to engage with government over the next few years will appreciate.
All right, thank you. It's now 12:24. We have to break shortly. I don't think we can get in the call now. We'll take a quick, very quick call and ask a question, and we'll just take the question. You're on the air. Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
Yes,
you're on the air.
Mr. Price, I'm your guest. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Am I on?
Yes, you're on.
Hello. Yeah, Mr. Price. I just want to thank Mr. Beezer and Franklin and Mr. Bell for the good work that they're doing. And I hope that Kelman can come on more often. I don't have any questions for you.
All right. Well, thank you very much. That's short and sweet. Well, I'd like to thank Ms. Verla DePisa, the President of the Democrat Labour Party, for coming here today. She only could come for an hour because of the retreat that is on, and so you'll miss the rest of the discussion. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure that what you said here was enough food for thought for a lot of people. And I'll let you have the last word.
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me. It's always good to have invigorating and stimulating discussion as it centers around Barbados and where we want it to go. I just want people to be absolutely clear. You cannot expect the Democratic Labour Party to absolve the blame for the last 30 years and then sit down and defend it at the same time. You cannot have it both ways. Having apologized to the people of Barbados, the election was clear in its result and the message being sent to the Democratic Labour Party. Having apologized to the people of Barbados, we are looking in a different direction. That is what this retreat is for. We are about rebranding ourselves, understanding what the people of Barbados need at this time, and certainly what they need in a 30 love situation is someone speaking up on their behalf. And we are determined to do that, regardless of who thinks that we ought to keep quiet.
But this, let me just go this last question, because you won't be here when we discuss this. But in terms of the present opposition, what is your take on the present opposition? Have there been a rubber stamp for the Barbados Labour Party, or have there been a vigorous opposition?
I want to thank Senator Franklin for stepping up on behalf of the people of Barbados. I believe that we are hearing more in terms of another view from the Senate as opposed to from the House. I make no apologies for that. Having said that, that too was a feature of the last administration. We got more robust discussion coming out of Senate, especially
you were in the Senate last time,
absolutely,
right?
But in a situation where opposition members were absenting themselves from the House, the discussion in the Senate turned out to be more robust. I mean, there was a point in time when I and all opposed the government initiatives, and I was a government senator. We have to have another opinion, even if we come to this conclusion. If you have not had those discussions, and this is the danger in having 26 out of 30, out of 29, now, if you want to say that one has been hived off, I am not sold on that. But if you have 26, one is sitting in the chair, who then governs cabinet? Cabinet turns out to be exactly who is in the House. That is dangerous for democracy because you're not having the checks and balances in House. So we're going to do those checks and balances outside of the House, and we're going to keep our voice being heard on behalf of the people of Barbados to give them something to think about. It can't just be wholesale taking, especially in this climate of having a second thought now about what is happening. It is important that people hear something else. And I will say, Senator Franklin has stepped up to the plate where that is concerned in a way that his ostensible boss has not done.
And Senator Franklin, one of the questions I wanted to ask you very quickly, is the opposition thinking about forming a political party?
I am not here to discuss that. We have not discussed it. I have not discussed it with Reverend Adley, and I couldn't give you his thinking on the matter.
All
right. If you did, well.
We'll take a break for the 12:30 news, and we'll be right back with Brass Tack Sunday, which is, of course, brought to you with the kind compliments of Williams Industries, Incorporated.